Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We join this land where they paint the eyes to find the new. We throw Saturn.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In the early 80s, English singer Peter Murphy and the band Bauhaus helped define the so-called goth rock sound. But since starting his solo career in the mid-80s, Murphy hasn't been so easily pigeonholed. He's done straight-ahead post-punk, ambient pop, even a collaboration with the Turkish Sufi musician and DJ Mercan Dede. His latest album, this one, is called Ninth. Just in case you haven't been counting along, Peter Murphy, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. Hello.
So this album came out last year, but you've just finished touring to support it. Now, the song we were just hearing, Creme de la Creme, that's an older song. So did you have years of songs and maybe some performing energy?
An older song. You're right. Actually, that's the only time that it's been. That's its most recent form, and that's the form that it ended up on Ninth. But how, it's interesting that you know that that is a song that I played live, actually.
It's been bootlegged.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a jazzier thing.
It was not the same song.
Yeah.
It was jazzier. I'm very impressed.
Well, you know, it's also been a long time. I mean, Unshattered was 2004, so...
Remember, though, I did a whole... I brought together Bauhaus again in 2005 between, and we invested a lot of time and work into that, as well as making an album. So, you know, Unshattered was my last solo, as it were. But then there was the Bauhaus reunion from 2000, which took us touring with Nine Inch Nails and our own world tour and making an album. That imploded again. Actually, that album's called Go Away White.
The last Bauhaus.
Classic. Yeah. Typically, we went in with nothing, purposefully. And we turned the tape on, started writing on the spot. So it was something in motion that I enjoyed for the first time in many years, actually writing as an ensemble with the group. And it was very... There was that volatile, you know... the visceral momentary thing where it was creating without having to strategize or to, you know, overdub or review. So I really loved doing that. And so that was the key. I felt this like hangover. I wanted to continue. So that's how Ninth happened. So we did that album. Unbelievably, we recorded it in 8 days.
It has a kind of live to tape sound.
It does, yeah.
I mean, if you listen to, like, Seesaw Sway, especially the vocals, I mean, that sounds like all of you maybe around a limited number of mics.
If you listen to Creme de la Creme, the vocal's not that precise and pristine or tuned. I mean, the way that we would do it, it's almost like ridiculous to say in the old days. It's not the old days. It's just like actually making a record and not emailing audio to people and adding it to your Pro Tools. Everybody who was involved in the record was there as it happened. That really makes a difference. And I sang on every take.
Let's hear a little bit of Seesaw Sway, the take that did make it to the record, the album called Ninth by Peter Murphy.
I fail to see in your eyes as I plunder the sky. I'm a winder of words and you're free to pry. She's looning at the moon. I've been looking.
I'm a seesaw sway.
That's Seesaw Sway. It's from Peter Murphy's most recent album, the album called Ninth, which came out last year, and Peter has just finished touring to support it. First solo record, Peter, since 2004, and even since then, big changes in the musical world. But some things seem to stay the same, and the importance of live performance seems to be something that has really come back in a big way.
When you tour and when you play, it does. It's part of the ritual. It's crucial. If you're a performer, that's as much as a significant artistic activity as making a song. For me, anyway.
Yeah. And performing...
So, and I think audiences get that. They smell that.
Yeah.
They love that. I want to see a performance, whether it's theatre, an actor, whether it's dance, that really does do something, you know.
Well, and your performances have always had that element of theater.
I hope so, thank you.
Yeah. Well, what about making an album in an age when most people consume music as an MP3 track here and an MP3
track? It's a bit worrying.
But Ninth seems like it's purposely sequenced to sort of bloom as it goes along.
Thank you.
As you get further into the album, it seems like the emotions get a little... deeper.
I'm a very emotional, serious person, but I'm a clown. I'm a mystic. I'm a fool. I'm a trickster. I'm vain. I'm hilarious on stage. I'm like one in a million, I tell you. I am. But it's not like I'm bragging. It's hard to be me, darling. You know what I mean? I mean, heavy lies, the head, yeah, whatever. So it's like, well, if I can do it, anybody can. But I must be marvelous because everybody says it and all this stuff. You know what I mean? So, but in fact, I am very, very actually quite good at what I do as well.
Do you see what you do ultimately at the end of the day is storytelling?
I do.
Because The Prince and Old Lady Shade.
It's a story.
This could be like one of those old Northern English murder ballads or something.
It's a story. It's oracular, bard-like, you know.
Right.
So I love that.
Prince and Old Lady Shade from Peter Murphy's latest album called Ninth, the founder of Bauhaus back in the early 80s and collaborator with so many others during the course of a long solo career, is with me on Soundcheck today. Peter, you were talking before about some of the ways you would describe yourself, mystic, fool. Some mystics would say the two are synonymous.
Trickster.
What about vampire?
Well, vampire was emoted in a song which was 9.5 minutes long. And it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. It was a classic. It's like the Stairway to Heaven of
goth.
But goth didn't exist then.
No, of course not.
The gothic culture is very rich. And if I were to tell you, not that we identify it, but the original gothic movement was an aesthetic and a shift in a mindset where one could perceive beauty in the apparently ugly or the apparently, you know, not so, you know. So that was it. That aside, that's far too intellectual. But anyway, the vampire thing was not my idea. Danny called me and said, Pete,
Danny being?
Danny Ash. Mm-hmm. Me and Dave have been talking. We've got a great idea for a song. You know, of vampires. You know, we were talking about the kind of like eroticism and the charisma and the power that this myth has. And also, like, eternal life, but trapped in the carnal, if you like, and all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
Hey, Pete, you know we were talking about that? Yeah. I said, well, have you heard of Bela Lugosi? I said, Bela Luigi? Well, who was he? Bela Lugosi? Oh, that chap. Oh, yeah. So what? Well, we want to write a song about a vampire, about that notion. And Dave's got the great idea to use Bela Lugosi as the character, because in fact he's the most unlikely vampire. You know, he had a round face.
Right.
He was a moon face. He wasn't all like gorge and thin and high cheekbones and scary. He was like
you.
He was like a teddy bear, really. So we meet, he's got this course, and they're very beautiful. It's very Gregorian. And then Kevin brilliantly does just a bottom over beat. And then we mic up the snare and start to manipulate it with delays to create an atmosphere. And then David, it's so evocative, that beautiful, those chords. It's very dynamic, and I let it go, and David gives me the lyrics. You know, that's how we were. I wrote a lot of this, but we were a workshop, so I was not, there was no
one person spot. Did all the
yeah. No, it yeah. was a workshop yeah. And I sang the first take just what you hear.
White on white, tramps on the black capes, back on the rack. Bela Lugosi's dead, the bats have left the bell tower. The victims have been bled, red velvet lines, the black box. Bela Lugosi's dead.
You see, I've just been singing for like 3 weeks. Danny and I had just met. He said, can you write lyrics? And say, yes, I can. We met, just he and I, and in the first weekend, we'd written half of what they call his seminal album, In the Flat Field. So the vampire thing was about that song.
Right.
And I, being the kind of actor type, I mean, it was very raw, like, it was just in me. It evoked that on stage and terrified people with it.
Undead, 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 the virginal brides file past his tomb.
Now, that was very powerful. And now I'm blamed for being a vampire because I'm gorge and I've got high
cheekbones.
And then I did The Hunger.
Right, so.
With Bella, and it was like, brilliant. So yeah. I'm not worried about it. It's great. And I know how to do that.
Bela Lugosi is dead. Bela Lugosi is dead.
So 1983, in the movie, the vampire movie, The Hunger, starring Kathleen Deneuve and David Bowie.
And God rest his soul, the director, Tony Scott.
Tony Scott
recently died, and it really, really affected me. Actually, God rest his soul.
So, but there's a critical scene in the movie where we see more of your face singing the song Bela Lugosi's
Dead. But Tony was
dead.
Excellent because, you know, originally he was looking for some band to be in the background, and I happened to do an ad. You know, the Maxell ad, the Maxell tape ad with the guy in the chair.
Sure,
that's me.
Yeah. That's you.
That's me.
The guy whose ears are being pinned to the wall by the...
That's the American version. But I did the original in England, and the American version had to use... They couldn't use my actual image. They had to use...
Why?
They had to use, like, an American model or so because... But check it out on YouTube, the Maxell tape ads. That's me. Anyway, the director...
You have to tell me. How did that happen?
Well... Howard Gard is the director. He was part of the Ridley Scott Associates production. So he was part of their team. He was one of his in-house directors. He had this commission to do Maxell tape, and he was looking for a model. And it was a groundbreaking ad.
Yeah.
At that time, it received rewards. It was so modern. The idea of this, Bauhaus Peter black homoerotic scary black spider thing. He was brilliant and more Bowie than Bowie and scarier than Iggy and like whatever, to appear in this ad. Don't say a word about it. The audience go, what? Like, who is that? It shifts their perception. So for me, that's kind of like artistic in itself. Yeah. Well, so I appeared in that. Howard Gard.
And Soundcheck listeners, our crew has just put it up on the website, so you can check it out. It's on YouTube.
Great. Howard Gard himself, the director, was obviously speaking to Tony, and he went to him, he said, you've got to see this. Because he came to our show and saw Bella, and he went, ding, eureka, ran to Tony, said, Tony, get here. Tony came to the show, he went, oh, yes. We're just this band, we don't have an agent, theatrical agent, so they approach the label. The label say, we're going to be in a Bowie film. Yeah, great. Tony Scott wants you to do the band in the background in the opening scene. We said, okay, great, that would be fantastic because we're in a film and it'll be great for us, right? It became an integral, crucial opening where my character was not just some bloke, you know, singing a song on stage. Right. It was somehow, you know, the alter ego of what was going on.
The sort of the image of the hands up against the fence.
And I did all that. Yeah. And poor Danny, you know, none of the other band were in. Only Danny Ash's elbow was in it for a bit.
So it
I got a bit of flack.
I would imagine.
Not overtly. But I, you know, what am I going to say to them? It's not like, look, darlings, I didn't steal anything. Why? He did it. He used me, but wasn't he right? You know what I mean? It's not like, aren't you proud of me or whatever? You know what I mean?
Peter Murphy with us, reminiscing now about some of the early Bauhaus days. Which brings us, in a funny way, back to Ninth, the solo record, because the song I Spit Roses, that is about that last period of time, you and Bauhaus making that
well,
final
we
record.
Were doing that album, and I think this, people have asked us all, why do we split up, or why did we split up? It seemed to be some, like, aching, like, burning question for everybody. Why? Where are you? Why don't you? Because they, you know, for many years, all of us, even, you know, the other guys who were in Love and Rockets and their own,
Love and Rockets being the
three
other guys
members
from Bauhaus.
The band from Bauhaus and for all those years. And Bauhaus seems to really hold this, what would you call it? It's unique. It's like we were the Doors. We were we split up. Nobody died. We were integral. We just stopped. And they said, what? We said, that's it. Bye. I mean, that's got integrity, even though it's foolish to some people. And it is full of emotionality. So, why did you split up? This was one event that happened, which is amongst brothers, which is amongst family, you know. And I'm not easy. None of us. Nobody's easy. And darling, I'm a singer. Of course I'm bonkers. Anyway, it was fine. We all know. But I walked in one morning, that's what happened. It's a story. It's the story. It's, if you want to know, that's why Bauhaus will always split up. But I'm not going to do a tell-all or a gossip thing. You know, I cast myself as the captain. And you think the ship, I am the ship, I'm the sea. If only you knew, you're floating on me because I'm me. Isn't that, like, ridiculous?
That's bonkers.
But it's beautiful. Yeah. But I will carry you with me. You know, that's so, like, that's what gets up their nose, you see. But I don't mean it, like, arrogantly. And it's, like, delightful. Anyway, so I write the story of why, and I actually did, one morning, wake up, after a slight fracas, you know, the night before, nothing incredibly. But we're all so respectful of each other. We're very English. We're kind of repressed, and then it all comes out. So anyway, that morning, I think, I know what they're going to be doing. They're going to be in conference about me, and I haven't done anything. And this is the trauma. You see, you know, the us and him syndrome, which I mentioned in the song. So I thought, what shall I do? I was speaking to a friend. She said, spit petals at them. Don't argue. So there was a rose there. I put it, had it in my mouth. And sure enough, there were my friends in conference about what happened last night. Now, I've got a reason. I know nothing happened last night. And they turned to me to, Peter, we have to talk to you, you know. And this is like such an affront to me again. Rather than argue or get angry, the moment they spoke to me, I spat roses in their faces.
And?
It was a moment of divine zen.
For and you, they went, maybe.
No, they were stopped in their tracks. I said, it's roses. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to argue. That said it all. So that's a real event.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Followed by the band's ultimate demise.
We didn't split because of that. That's not the reason we split. But that's one example.
Right.
And it's just a nice story. And it's not damning on anybody.
I Spit Roses. It's from Peter Murphy's latest album, which is called Ninth. And Peter, before we get to this, let me thank you for being with us.
Thanks very much, John.
This is Soundcheck.
The captain is sick. In the moonlight the same. The ship all himself. Where a spit out the name. A high mutiny. Submerged down and under. Shick-shack left you in shock. Shed poison with a lover's luck. All hands wound and fraught. Blow the dark that we thought.